Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and I'm delighted that you're all able to join us for our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle teleconference call here. Excuse me, it's May 17th, 2018. Wow, 6 p.m. Pacific time. So, yes, as you all perhaps know, we are going to be joined on this call by Dr. Silesh Rao a little bit later, pretty soon, I think, and which is kind of unusual. Very often we don't have any guests. It's just us, the tribe here, but sometimes it's nice to have someone who's in our tribe also give a little talk about what they're up to help promote veganism in the world and to help transform our society in a positive way. So we're looking forward to that. And as I mentioned in the email, if possible, Anna Ferguson, whose new book, World Peace Diet Yoga, is coming out pretty soon. She's pretty much going to finish and printed, and there's going to be a launch. She'll talk about that a little bit, although I found out that she's on a flight today and it's been delayed, so it may or may not actually happen, but we'll see. You can call in. So let's take a moment here as we begin our call and just give thanks for a few minutes. Thank you, really, all of you for joining us. It means so much, I think, to be able to gather this way in the spirit of respect for all expressions of life, support each other and ourselves in contributing our own unique gifts and abilities and talents to the task at hand, which is to help awaken really not only ourselves but humanity to the devastating consequences of animal agriculture and the enormous benefits of transitioning to a plant-based way of eating and living, a vegan way of eating and living, an ahimsa way of eating and living, and animal liberation way of eating and living. That is available, really, to all of us. It's really great news. So the basic idea, in the Christian tradition, the word gospel means good news, and I kind of feel like we have the vegan gospel here, too. I mean, it's the good news of veganism that not only is our own physical health enormously improved, but everything else as well, and it's something that's available, and yet there's tremendous resistance, as we all know. So I'd love to talk about that a little bit more, and how we can help soften that resistance and help penetrate, in a sense, or dissolve the resistance and help our society to transition and to also live our own lives and thrive as vegans in a not-yet-vegan world. So usually at the very beginning, we take just a couple of minutes to turn our attention within. So let's just do that now, wherever you happen to be. If it's convenient, feel free to close your eyes, however you'd like to do it, and give thanks, knowing that as the World Peace, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals prayer says, the compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. The basic truth that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And we, I think all of us can feel into the wisdom of this truth, that at a deeper level there is a field of truth, of wisdom, of compassion that encircles our beautiful planet, and it connects us with each other and with many others, probably, literally millions of other people who are also contributing to this, what I call in the new book, newer book called, Your Inner Islands, the truth field, the field where we're connected to the truth that we are, the field of compassion and awareness that connects us with each other and with all forms of life and with the source of all life, and that what we are is eternal consciousness. So we give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have for this call. The time usually flies by very quickly, and for each one of us who are on the call and for all the efforts that each one of us are making, and the combined effort to help transform our society, and we give thanks for everyone who's also endeavoring in the same direction. We know that we're part of a whole global awakening of human consciousness right now out of an extremely difficult time of violence and oppression and exploitation of human beings and animals and ecosystems, that we're in a birthing process, a transformational process, and that each one of us can be seen perhaps as cells in the body of the chrysalis transforming from the caterpillar into the butterfly. And we may be looked at as oddballs, but we're from the future, as they say. So we look a little strange in our the way we look at life, and yet it's growing all the time, and we give thanks for that, that this movement is growing. We give thanks for the animals of this earth, for the beauty and abundance of this earth. We give thanks for all of the efforts that are being made, and really in many ways, again, for the animals especially that are used for meat dairy products and eggs and other products, that they are in many ways martyrs in this movement that we are involved with. They're giving their lives by the thousands, by the millions, actually even by the billions every single day on the altar, but you know, they're giving their lives, they're being killed completely unnecessarily. This is the ultimate price. And as Gandhi said, in any movement, we have to be willing literally to give our life for the advancement of the whole human race and for each other. And so I think animals, it's amazing how they are abused, and hopefully we can awaken from this really in many ways living nightmare of violence towards these animals. And we see that this awakening is happening more and more. So thank you all for joining us, and I'm going to give thanks for this and close this part of our time, the little time that we spend just affirming the truth that we are grateful for this precious opportunity of a human life and this opportunity to contribute to the movement. And it goes by very quickly, as I'm sure you are all aware. I'm very amazed. Madeline and I are going to be celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary in a couple of months. And it just seems like yesterday that we get married. So, you know, the decades go by, and we'll all be, at some point, before we know it, leaving our bodies. And that's something unavoidable. And I think it's something to be celebrated, really, that we're on this earth for a short time. It's a beautiful experience and opportunity that we have to grow and learn and contribute to what's happening here, and that we can come and meet our real family in many ways. We have maybe a biological family and maybe a family of spiritual friends who perhaps have a deep level agreements to work together to bring light and wisdom and joy and respect to a society that is still laboring under some really outdated and outmoded and obsolete traditions and narratives and stories and practices that are enslaving us as well as enslaving animals. So thank you all for hearing the call of your true nature and for this lifetime. And it takes really quite an enormous effort. Everyone who's gotten onto this call, I know you have a fantastic, wonderful story that perhaps you can write about or share at some point. And it's the journey of awakening is tremendous, actually, to be able to undertake this journey. It's a great privilege, and it never ends. So even after we go vegan, we're in many ways just beginning, and it gets better all the time. All right, so bless you all, and thanks for calling. So now I'm kind of scanning here the list of the people who are with us, and sometimes it's hard to see exactly who. Wait a second, I think I know. All right, here we go. So let's see. So yes, so Silesh is with us. I just figured that out, and so. I think without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and unmute Silas's phone. I believe this is the right one here. So, Silas, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great.
I can tell by your area code. Give it away. So, thank you so much. Actually, and before I say anything more, I just want to introduce you properly, and I think it's great to just think a little bit. You know, Silas is an old friend of ours, and we go back really quite a few years. He's a longtime deacon, and he has a PhD in electrical engineering. He's a systems specialist in computers. Worked for many years in the field, and basically, as far as I understand, kind of gave that up to devote himself full-time to helping to heal our world, especially focusing on climate healing, and has a website, Climate Healer, I believe it is, and has written two books, Carbon Dharma, The Occupation of Butterflies, and then Carbon Yoga before that, The Vegan Metamorphosis, and I guess Carbon Yoga came after that. And he's also the executive producer of The Human Experiment film, also Cowspiracy, which you all know, and also What the Health, which you all know. And it's really great to have Silas with us. He's really on the same page on everything. And I especially wanted to find out and have Silas, if possible, share with us some of the projects that you're on now, Silas, that you're finding very interesting in what you're talking about, because I know you have something called, the last kind of like the getting to 2026 at the time when we're really getting down to the wire here. So I won't say any more about it. Please just go right ahead. And everybody, as you're listening, if something comes to you and you'd like to ask a question, I think you know the drill by now, hopefully, as I know some of you are new. Press star 6 on your phone. Just press star 6, and that will alert me that you'd like to have your phone unmuted, and we can have a dialogue. We can always have a dialogue at any time. You can always ask a question at any time, but you can't do it unless you press star 6. So, Silas, thank you for joining us, and let's dive right in.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Vilo. This 2026 issue came up 4 years ago. In 2014, the World Wildlife Fund issued a report called the Living Planet Report. They issue it every 2 years. And in that, they announced that the biomass of wild vertebrates had declined by 52% between 1970 and 2010. Now, I'm a systems engineer, and when I hear a number like that, I try to model how fast is this going to go. And so I did that modeling, and I human beings are a very different kind of predator compared to any other predator. Any other predator, as the prey population declines, the predator population also declines because they don't find enough to eat. But that's not the case with human beings. Our population keeps increasing, even as nature is dying around us. Because we are deploying technology to find these predators, find these prey, and to kill them. So to properly model what human behavior is doing, I used an exponential curve that goes from 1 to 3.84, which is really the impact growth of human beings between 1970 and 2010. Our population roughly doubled, and our per capita consumption roughly doubled. So overall impact to the planet increased by a factor of 3.84. So if you take an exponential curve like that and you just extrapolate that out and see how many more years can we keep doing this before we wipe them off the face of the Earth, it turned out to be 16 years. So that's when 2026 came into my consciousness. Basically, by 2026, we are on track to kill all the wild vertebrates off. So that was the conclusion I reached in 2014, and I was so shocked by that. I thought, maybe there's something wrong. Maybe I may be simplifying my model, right? So
right.
Let me wait and see what happens. Because these reports get issued every 2 years. So in 2016, the World Wildlife Fund Living Planet Report 2016 came out. And it said that between 1970 and 2012, 58% of all wild vertebrates died. So then I knew that my calculation was correct, because we are losing 3% per year relative to 1970 levels. So which means in 16 years, you're going to lose 48%, which is 100% of, you know, all wild vertebrates. So that's when I started talking about this. I created a Vegan World 2026, because I realized that if we keep going the current direction, we're going to kill them all off. So the only way to address this is to create a strong force on the other side, pulling people away from this kind of destructive behavior.
Right.
So we had no choice but to shoot for the moon, you know, to turn the whole world vegan by 2026. And if we put all our efforts into doing that, I really believe that we can stop this and we can reverse it.
So when you, just a quick question. So when you do these calculations, which is relatively straightforward, it sounds like you feel that it's based on good science. In other words,
right.
World Wildlife Fund science is good.
Right.
It seems to me that they would also be saying the same thing, right? I mean, they would also, why are you the only one beating the drum and ringing the bell and jumping up and down? And right? I mean,
right.
There's all these scientists. To them, they must be some system engineers in there that can extrapolate a curve and start yelling and screaming and saying, come on, everybody. Why are you the one?
Right. So let me explain to you what is going on. If you look at any biological systems engineer, systems person who is doing the modeling, they are modeling it based on the standard predator-prey model. So a standard predator-prey model is what you would apply to wolves versus rabbits type of situation. And there, you see that as the rabbit population declines, the wolf population declines, because the wolf has a hard time catching the rabbit.
Right.
And I noticed that when they are modeling humans versus nature, they're using the same model. There's even a paper from the supposed by NASA that came out in 2014 by Safa Motasarai, who's a professor out of the University of Maryland. And he had used that model. And it got a lot of publicity because it showed that human population is going to reach a peak and then decline and then go up again and decline, basically following the wolf versus rabbits model. So I wrote to Professor Matasarai and I said, are you sure that that model is correct for human beings? You know, because George Box is a statistician that said all models are wrong, but some are useful. Right? Because you can't. When you model reality, you are trying to approximate it. So,
right.
So I said, is that model correct for human behavior? Because notice what's happening in the ocean. We are killing fish in the ocean, and as the fish population declines, and they're having harder and harder time catching the fish, they're actually deploying big data software technology and GPS hardware technology to find the last remaining fish in the ocean. We are catching fish 2,000 feet below sea level right now. I mean, if you look at the technology for catching fish, it looks like a Mars landing or something like that. Lots of monitors all over the place and people are watching all of them, and there is software gathering all the data and crunching through that to figure out exactly where the fish are. This is why Somalians are unable to catch fish. There's no fish around Africa anymore. Right?
Right. That's why we're doing so much aquaculture, because
right.
The fish are gone.
Yeah,
actually, you're right. The oceanographers are banging the drum and saying
right.
The oceans are going to be dead. They usually
right.
say by 2040 or something like that, which
right.
is still only a few years away.
Right.
But
I'm saying it's even worse than that, because you see, there's no way that the animals can hide from us. With our technology, we'll find them. If you want to kill them, we kill them.
Right.
There's no escape for them, right? And there are more of us, and we are eating more and more. So we're destroying forests faster and faster. We are raising a lot more animals. And if any predator comes near any of our animals, we kill them. So our destruction of nature is proceeding at the same exponential pace, regardless of how little there is left of them. Right? So if you put that model in there, you see right away that it's going to be over for us in 8 years.
Right.
And
wow.
So I wrote to him and I said, are you sure your model is correct? And that's when he realized that there was something wrong with the way he was modeling it. And he did tell me, you're right, but I don't know how to model that. Because they're used to their equations and they're running those equations out there. And they don't know how to change it to this nonlinear way of thinking, right? That we're going to keep exponentially taking out the animals until they're all gone.
Yeah, I think also, thanks so much for explaining that, Silas. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you also just, making these numbers available to people more and more.
Right.
And I think the thing is also probably, because my experience just traveling, as Madeline and I have traveled quite a bit to different places, Asia and Africa and so forth, to me, it makes sense what you're saying, in the sense that you have these corporations which are really focused primarily on short-term profit,
right,
are willing to completely sacrifice like lions and elephants. I mean, they just want to get rid of zebras and giraffes and all these animals in Africa because more and more Kentucky Fried Chicken and Burger King spring up everywhere. They're trampling the corn. And so just how we got rid of animals here, they didn't do that in Africa because of the they didn't have so much meat eating and so forth. But what's happening, combining that with the destruction of the Amazon rainforest, which is an enormously rich habitat. It's just the destruction of habitat. If the animals don't have a habitat, then they go extinct. And we're in the middle of the largest mass extinction in 65 million years. Everyone agrees about that. But what they don't get is that how quickly it's going and how urgent the situation actually is. That we only have a few years before we reach probably an irreversible decimation of wildlife and habitat. And then, of course, the link has to be that if we cause them to go extinct, what's going to happen to us? I mean, first of all, I don't think we would. I think we would also. I think any scientist would realize that we will also go extinct as well if we just decimate ecosystems to the degree that all the other vertebrates are dead, basically, or can't support themselves. So it's really this point that I write about in the World Peace Diet. These are the last days of eating animals, one way or the other. Either we go vegan, or there's no more humans. And either way, this system is coming to an end. We can be glad of that, I guess. The factory farming will be ending within a decade.
Right.
I mean, according to these figures that you're working with, and what is your takeaway on this? Like, is that essentially we should be sharing this with people so that they just don't ask questions and go vegan, right? I mean, if they see that this is important, because I think that's the big problem. Most scientists don't want to address this because they think that we have to need to get enough protein, so forth.
Well, there's a lot of culture stories built around that, and scientists are naturally very reticent. You know? They don't like to tell you the bad news
until
they're absolutely sure, right? But personally, I think if we let this happen, I will die of grief. I don't want this to happen. I'm going to fight to not make this happen. Right?
And right.
I'm on the other side. So, I've seen it happen in India. I've seen the lion population decimate to the point that there were only 10 lions left in India in 1900. Get it to size.
I see.
Way back, 100 years ago. There were only 10 lions left. And then they created a sanctuary for those 10 lions to preserve them. And those 10 lions have become 100 lions now. But they are so interbred, they are so genetically weak that they are literally dying in front of our eyes.
Oh, wow.
It's pathetic what has happened to them. And I don't want that to happen to all of the wild vertebrates in the world, right? I mean, I don't want this to happen to the African elephant, and to the rhinos, and the hippopotamus, you name it. And vertebrates meaning even the birds, the fishes, they're all included in this town.
Right.
They're all dying. Birds, because they're pouring all this poison out there, and the insects are eating those poisons, and then the birds are eating the insects, and so they're ingesting the poison. I mean, it's really crazy what they're doing to the planet.
Right.
So when we raise that consciousness and we get people thinking about what does a new world look like? What does a new system look like? Because I really believe that as vegans, we have a responsibility to show the world what does a vegan world look like. If you're not going to hurt any animals, obviously you're not going to hurt any people either. So this is a world of normalized non-violence. Currently, we live in a world of normalized violence. Still, our stories are filled with violence. Our fairy tales are filled with violence. So we have to change everything in this world of normalized non-violence. And so we have a responsibility to build all that infrastructure in there to show what does it look like so that people can say, yes, I want to live like that. And I will join you.
That's great. So the idea, I know you're involved with wanting to create kind of an example community or a whole, maybe even better, a whole network of communities where
right.
people that are vegan and where people practice ahimsa, compassion, and nonviolence, essentially, for animals, ecosystems, and each other, and to find ways of living together that humans actually had in the past where they were more sustainable and more respectful of each other and animals. And that's a beautiful vision. Do you want to say anything more about that at all? Before we,
I'm working
with
some.
I don't want to keep on too long here, but
Basically I'm working with, it's a whole confluence of things that have to happen together because it's about distributing energy. It's about distributing the power. You can't have concentrations of power in a system like that. So how do you create a system in which you can actually make decisions without needing a boss making decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or without concentrating power in fewer and fewer people. And so we are working with software tools to ensure that there are processes put in place that the overall decision that comes out of the software is smarter than every individual, so to speak. It's called collective intelligence you can create in software. So things like that that we can put in place so that it becomes automatic, that we live like ordinary human beings, and then when we have to make a decision, we input something into this iPhone or something, and it tells you what it thinks is the right thing to do. And then we can all decide whether to accept that or not. Things like that. So I'm working with a software group called Holochain on the way to build an internet like that. So that you're setting up all of the infrastructure necessary for these communities. And I really think that communities are going to spring everywhere. You know, it's not just in a few places. This is why I want to have this conference in Arizona, where we
right.
come together to talk about all of the transitions that need to happen to get to a vegan world. You know, so we have a list of 40 different transitions that need to happen, from animal slavery to animal liberation, you know, from debt currency to an ecological currency. You know, things like that, from
right.
representative democracy to a participatory democracy. So each of these transitions, you can then list out what are all the things that need to happen for these transitions to occur, and then you can then work on what does the new model look like when you have already transitioned to that. If the animals are liberated, would there be dogs on leashes? You know, that's the one question, right? Things like that. So we need to start looking at what that world looks like and ask questions about it and refine it in our own mind. So that's the purpose of this conference, to get people to come together to start thinking about these things. So they can then go back and, you know, form, just like what you're doing, the work you've done, right? Form other people.
Right.
They can talk about it and
right.
locally build, you know, communities that are discussing these things. And so we refine it, because we need to figure this out in the next 8 years. And I really tell people, you know, this is the greatest time in our lives, right? Because we are working on something new like this.
Right.
And
yeah, it's very exciting in a sense. I mean, it's
right.
like, I think we all know in our bones that the system that we're born into, this whole cultural way of living, the capitalist economic system that's dominated by large corporations and financial
yeah.
institutions, and that basically makes money off of war and exploitation of people and ecosystems. We know that this system is horrible, and we're at the point now where it's absolutely it's gonna destroy everything if we aren't able to
right.
sow seeds that will help it to transform. And so I think everyone who's aware of these things now and is actually a vegan is actually doing what we can to embody these new values and bring them into our world. You know, it gives our life a lot of meaning, and I think it's really hopeful. I mean, there is hope, I think. I mean, in the sense that there is a possibility. The Earth is enormously resilient. We human beings are very resilient and creative. We don't have to keep believing these old narratives and living by them. We need new stories, essentially.
Right.
So I just want to thank you for giving this great overview of the problem, in a sense, and the possible, and the good thing is we have solutions, right? We need to find more solutions, but we have the broad outline of solution. There is a way forward. I mean, the animal agriculture is such a fundamentally central part of the problem, if we can address that. So I'd like to make, you know, tell everybody who's listening, press star 6 if you have a question. We don't want to keep Silas too long here, but we can have a couple of questions maybe. And I'll mention it because I know that you're planning this conference for October, and it's going to be in Tempe, Arizona, near Phoenix, and it's going to be, I believe, like the last weekend in October, the 27th, 28th, around then. So I'll put up in the email that I always send out after the call to everybody. If it's okay with you, Silas, I think you
sure.
have a website or something. I'll put up your website so people can get more information on your website. That's climatehealers.org, right? You want me to use that one?
Right.
So, yeah. And information there about the conference, which sounds like a very important conference. And you can follow Silas's work that he's doing, and get involved if you'd like to. We have a couple of people that have raised their hands, so I'll go ahead and unmute Floyd Weller's house here. Let me see if I can do that properly. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Will.
Hey,
Dr. Tuttle.
Hi.
Hi. I felt myself wanting to comment through, I think what Silas was saying was, you know, really interesting and cool. But I kind of was getting the feeling that, you know, while he was talking, that none of it is going to be possible because of this herding culture that we're in. And the power is so concentrated. And as soon as somebody tries to gain some real ground in doing the new societies that he was talking about, the cultures, whatever, they're going to kill everybody. you know what I mean? They're
mm-hmm.
going to stop it. It's just not. I'm thinking that the real way to do it the quickest, maybe the only way, is of transforming ourselves with what I'm reading now in your book about, you know, meditating and ahimsa and becoming, you know, more conscious and more present and actually bringing the change in from the inside. And
right.
I think that I'm just questioning that might be the only way, because we just, when they start seeing the movement that's going to change their power structure, not going to let it happen. I just don't see how they're going to let it happen. Maybe that's just my, you know, fetus or whatever, that cynicism.
Right.
That's what I want.
Thank you so much, Floyd, for bringing up that very important question. Do you want to address it, Silas, quickly?
It's a great question, and I think he's absolutely right. You're absolutely right that it needs to come from within each one of us as well. But it then manifests itself in the outer world too. So what happens is, just like what Gandhi did in the Khadi movement in India, he got people to change their clothes. And even though the British were the most powerful at that time, it was the empire that the sun would never set on, they could do nothing about it, because when people change their clothes, eventually their textile mills had to go bankrupt. There was nothing they could do because no one was buying their clothes. So the same thing would happen with the power structure here as more and more people become vegan and we change ourselves from within. There is nothing they can do. We are not buying their stuff. And they're going to have the power structure will collapse. And at that point, you need to have something new in place. Right? So that
makes
the collapse doesn't mean anarchy, right? So that you do have something in place that you can say, hey, we can coordinate ourselves like this.
Okay. I understand.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. I guess, change within, and having an outward plan. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for that great question, Floyd. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for allowing
me. Great. Yeah, also, I think there's a nice... example with Bolivia and McDonald's. I think you probably mentioned that before here, but when McDonald's went to Bolivia, they opened up a bunch of restaurants and advertised for 3 or 4 years, and nobody would go, and finally McDonald's left Bolivia. There's no McDonald's in Bolivia because no one would go. They just couldn't get anybody to buy the products. So all I can think of is if they get really desperate, they'll try to do... make it a law that you have to eat meat or something. You have to. But I think what you're saying is they will, obviously there are forces that will resist, and we can see them already resisting enormously in thousands of ways, with subsidies and laws and media domination and everything else. But still, at a deep level, the transformation is proceeding, which is positive, but the real question is now we have, which I think we all know, that the time situation, the time pressure is so strong, and I think I have felt this for quite a few years because of climate change, destabilization, and other things that we don't have that much time to play with here, and what you're saying is that this is a whole other angle to look at it. Again, destruction of habitat, too. We have one other question. Go ahead. This is our friend Grace, I believe. I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone. Grace, are you there? Did that work?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, good evening, everyone. And I did have an intelligent question. I just wanted to thank you for your work, and Dr. Rao also. This is really very, very grateful and hopeful. I met Cecile of the Vegan Permaculture Design course in Kentucky last year, and I just wanted to say that if he is a leader of the youth, then hope is well-founded. He's a beautiful young man, and it was a real pleasure and a privilege to study the Vegan Permaculture Design course with your son. Thank you so much.
Great. Wow, that's good. So you've learned a lot of good principles. It's a little hard to understand you for some reason. I'm not sure if you're kind of an echo in your line or something.
Is that any better?
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm so sorry. So I got to study with Dr. Ralph's son, Shield.
Oh, okay.
Because everybody calls him Sushi.
Right.
Vegan Sushi. So he's just wonderful, and I hope that he assumes a real leadership role. That he should be wonderfully influential and help make the world a beautiful place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Grace. Great to hear from you. So, Silas, you want to say a word about him? What's his name?
Sushil.
You know? How do you spell it?
S-U-S-H-I-L. So, Sushi and an L. So he's, he had taken a vegan permaculture course in Kentucky, I think, or Tennessee. Not sure. I think Grace was there at the time.
Okay, great. That'll be part of what you're going to be. That's part of it. I think any positive future is growing food
right.
In a organic way. So,
right.
Yeah, I'll have a link to that also on our notes from this call. I think that's very interesting to find out more about that. That's something Madeline and I are working with in a small way here. Probably some of you are too, just growing your own food best you can in your backyard or whatever, without using any animal inputs. And we just love it. We're growing food here and. I think any kind of vegan community would be based on being as sustainable as possible, food-wise, energy-wise, so forth. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
The same way? Yeah.
It's about it's about localizing everything, localizing energy production and consumption, localizing food production and consumption, and even distributing the communications as well. So. You're not depending on Google to do things for you, but you write your own software for this, So that's part of what the Holochain group is doing. It's about taking the power back from Google and Yahoo and Amazon and those guys.
Great. Well, that sounds like a great thing to work on for a few days, for a few years. Anyway. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, I think we're really at our time. I don't want to take up any more of your time, it's really been interesting to hear what you're working on. And I hope if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, come and see Silas. She'll be speaking on Saturday, not this Saturday, but a week from Saturday at the Animal Liberation Conference. And I think you'll be at some other conferences too. Do you want to tell us any other things you're going to be speaking at in the near future? That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I'm speaking at the CowCon.
You're going to be at CowCon too, right? That's June 2nd and 3rd. Actually, Anna Ferguson will be there. Madeline and I will be there too. So that'd be great in San Francisco on June 2nd and 3rd. Anything else?
Right. And the Asheville Vegan Fest June 9th.
That's where in Ashland.
In Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville, North Carolina, right. Great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Oh, it's always good to hear your wisdom. We really appreciate all you're doing. And everyone, if you ever get to the Phoenix, also Silas is coordinating a vegan spirituality group there as well.
Right.
So I know our paths will be crossing again. Thanks so much. We'll talk later. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much, Silas.
Bye-bye.
All right. So it was great having Silas on the call. I think it was a little bit noisy in the background, but I think hopefully you could understand him okay. And I think, the main thing is to open our minds and hearts to the reality that human civilization, so-called, what we're doing here, is having a profound impact on other species, and it tends to be ignored. It's not part of our, what we talk about, what we think about. We're talking about terrorism and economic situations and sports and so forth. And to really take time to feel into the impact that we're having on the world, the living world, the web of life. And it is quite disturbing to hear that kind of news. I mean, you kind of go, I think most of us will just think, oh, that couldn't be true. You know, we would have heard about something like that by now. However, from my point of view, I have so little faith, actually, in the mass media and in the capacity of any truth, really, to come out through official channels, that I think it's really in this way that we're doing right now, through grassroots conversations, that we're actually probably going to get the most accurate information from people who have their fingers on the pulse of what's actually happening, whether it's through spiritual means and spiritual sensitivity, or whether it's through being able to, as Silas is doing, you know, extrapolate the research that's been done and make the connections and see that for all these different reasons, we are reaching a really critical time here. And I think we've kind of have felt that coming. Hopefully there's some kind of window of opportunity where we can change and pull away from the brink, in a sense. And I think it's not a good, for me, in a sense, it's not a good idea to start, you know, really, you're shaking people until they go vegan, or just like demand it or something. Because we don't have, unfortunately, we're such a minority, and you know, the systems are all in place to just be in denial of this kind of information. So the idea is to creatively work with this message, with the message of veganism, and it's world peace diet message. It's always been a part of the message that we've been sharing, that it is urgent. I mean, the urgency is real. As I've written, when you have the kind of population we have of 7.5 billion people and the kind of technology that we have, are destroying ecosystems and each other, the old narrative absolutely will destroy everything. And I think we can see that unfolding before our eyes here. So while our government in many ways, unfortunately, is going in the other direction, you know, sort of away from what Savish is talking about, and towards more subsidies for meat and dairy and more criminalization of anyone speaking out against the system of violence towards animals, I think that's what's happening. Okay, so it's the last gasp, in many ways, I think, struggle. And it's important for us, as Floyd mentioned, I think, too, to embody what veganism is more and more deeply ourselves, that's really the way forward is for all of us, to make an effort to understand the consequences of animal agriculture in our society, and then also how it affects us individually and how in our own relationships, even, you know, we're still carnivores in the sense of, you know, seeing others as instruments to be used rather than respecting them as beings. And I know as vegans we still can be wounded by this society and operating in those ways. So thank you, Silas. I know Silas is probably on to other things at this point. Thank you all for being part of this. We have a little more time. And someone has raised their hand here, area code 518. I'm not sure who it is, but I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone. And hopefully, if your question is, if you still have
hi,
something
Will?
You'd like to share. Hello, yes, hi.
Will, this is Flowers. How are you?
Oh, hey, hi. Thanks
it's
for,
Flowers
calling.
Us.
Yes.
And I would just, it was really interesting to listen to Silas. And I wanted to just tell people that even there's a lot of weird stuff going on, and we're trying to make a big difference. And one of the things that I've been helping and working on for a long time is working with gentleworld.org, gentleworld.org. We're a 501c3, and we are the longest running vegan communities in the world. And
yes.
Silas, I was surprised he didn't, maybe he doesn't know about us, but I think, I remember his son came and stayed with us last year in 2000. Silas, his son came and visited us in New Zealand. And it was a great visit. And we've been working since the 78, 79 with doing whatever we can, whether it be veganic gardening, our cookbook, nutrition books, seminars. We show videos, restaurants, catering, celebrity banquets, even putting on the first. If you remember, I think we were at Clark Gibbet and we put on the first World Peace Diet Seminar. We invited you and, you know, we did whatever we can to change the planet. And I just wanted to let the world know that vegan communities, they exist and we're here. And, of course, we need more. And we need all the help that we can get. And I was hoping that if people want to know more about it, they can sign up for our free online newsletter at gentleworld.org. And we're also on YouTube. And, I mean, we do it. We write poetry. We sing songs. Anything to make a difference in this planet, to help change the plight for the animals. And I just wanted to let you know that we're here.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, thank you so much for getting on the call and reminding us about Gentle World. And I agree completely that Gentle World has, you know, been actually so persevering for decades with creating vegan community on the Big Island of Hawaii and also on in New Zealand. I remember you guys were in Florida in the early days, and I know you have a place, I think, also in upstate New York. But it's a beautiful thing, and I kind of wonder why there aren't more Gentle Worlds. I think we should just have, instead of one, we should have thousands of vegan communities that are land based and that grow food and that where people support each other and where the core is a vegan way of living, and the ethic of compassion, kindness for animals is sort of the foundation. But hopefully we'll have more communities like yours. And I recommend, and I'll write that also in the email I send out, gentleworld.org. We're on your mailing list, and I've worked together, like you say, in New Zealand. We put on lectures. You guys helped arrange. So I just think some great articles that are written, videos that are made, and an example, really. And I think it's also, if anyone wants to find live in a vegan community, you can also check out the Gentle World. They just bought some really beautiful land on the Big Island of Hawaii, and I know, they're doing wonderful things there. So if anyone wants to find out more about that, you can easily contact them. It's not difficult. You guys are old friends. We met, way back, and I don't know when, probably almost 20 years ago in Costa Rica. I remember.
Right. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and I thought you looked like Dr. Michael Clapper. I remember that.
Right.
He said, "Oh, I know Dr. Michael Clapper," and we just became friends from there. And,
right.
And I wanted to say this new land that we got. I mean, people can write for information, but we need help. You know, we don't have the fund for infrastructure or anything. It's just something if people feel like they have the energy, knowledge to help, that they can write us and give us some ideas. Because our place in Hawaii is so small, there are people from all over the world coming in to learn about the vegan lifestyle, and we don't have room. So someone else is helping us and they gave us a loan to buy this 34 acres, which we now own, and we need help moving forward. So if anyone has any information, that would be really nice with ideas and things, because it's so important to keep sharing the way life should be on a vegan diet.
Right.
The animals need us so much.
Right.
So
That's so true. Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks so much, Flowers, for joining us on the call. And I'll definitely make a link to this. And if anyone has any questions, they can ask me. I know quite a bit, and they can also go to the website and find out more. So it's so good to hear your voice. Thanks so much.
Nice to hear you. Thank you, Will.
All right. Bye. Love to Madeline.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Love to you. Okay, love to you and Madeline. Good. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. So that was Flowers. She lives with Gentle World. It's really true. In the sense that in Hawaii, they have, in New Zealand, they have some beautiful land right on a river. The water's so clean you can drink it, they're there half the year, usually in the winter, and then in the summer, half the year they're on the Big Island, and they just purchased land in almost the best part of the Big Island of Hawaii. I mean, it's just a wonderful climate and view. It's elevated up a little bit from the ocean with ocean views and really rich soil. But they don't have money to do infrastructure and build houses, so it took so much money just to buy it. So they're looking for miracles, and if anyone wants to find out more, you can find out more. Those are the kind of things that are great. And I also wanted to just mention one other thing that's kind of somewhat related about community, that I was also told by a contact that I have that there is an opportunity for anyone who would like, who's the right fit, I guess. They're looking for someone who's a vegan, preferably a Christian vegan. There's a minister, it's actually Reverend Frank Hoffman. He's a well-known vegan Christian, and he has a weekly newsletter and writes in sermons and everything. It's all vegan. And he would like an assistant. And the two of them really do it. So they have a house in upstate New York, and they have two houses in a community. And so you would have your own house there, and you would be responsible for social media and helping out, and also, I guess, helping them with groceries and things like that. They're getting a little bit elderly now, and so they want someone they can kind of pass the torch to, really, to carry this on. And so, you have your own house and utilities and plus salary. And it's for a vegan who would like to do that. So I said I would mention it to our people because they want someone who's spiritual. But like I say, preferably Christian, although I have to say they're very, very open-minded, but they are Christian-oriented. And so that would be better if you are comfortable with Christianity. And that's a nice opportunity. So just let me know. Just send me an email if you're interested. I can put you in touch with the woman who's kind of coordinating all this. And so I think it is a kind of a neat opportunity for the right person. All right, so here we are. It's now been an hour, and I'm wondering, let me see, I think if Anna Ferguson, if you're here, just press, I'm not sure your phone, so many phones nowadays, they just say wireless caller, they don't say, I don't know who it is, and so if you're here, please press *6 so that I can see that you're here. She did send me a message that she might not be able to make the call. So maybe I'll just say it briefly that Anna Ferguson, a lot of you know her. She's from Cincinnati, and she and Mark Stroud for 5 years put on the World Peace Jubilee, which was a vegan conference every October that we spoke at. And we also had World Peace Diet Facilitator trainings for 5 years at these every October. that's where Kip Anderson actually took our training and many other people who have gone on to do wonderful things. And so they're wonderful. They really started the one of the first World Peace Diet groups, reading, you know, having a weekly or biweekly study group, the World Peace Diet, and kept it going for many years. And started World Peace Yoga, a yoga studio that's vegan and yoga teacher training. And now Anna has a book out, and it's just coming out, and she wanted to tell everybody about it and talk about a book launch. I think it's going to happen later in the year. And so that's something to, you know, be aware of. And if I get any information from her later today or this evening, I'll be sure to include that also in our email so you have that information as well. So if there are there now, are there any questions anyone has about anything else? Because if there are, just let me know. You can press star 6 on your phone. There are a few other things I wanted to cover in the short amount of time we have left, but I really like, you know, if possible, if you folks, if you guys, you know, if you have any questions or comments, you know, this is a great time. Once a month we get together, and anything that's on your heart or in your mind that you're not really sure about that you think would be good to address. I think it's really been fantastic to have Dr. Silas Rao with us on the call telling us about, it's not the most uplifting news, but it's the idea is to see that animal agriculture is really tearing down the actual structure of our planet, the underlying health of our ecosystems is being completely destroyed on every level: the water, the forests, the oceans, the climate, the pesticides, the sheer pollution, the absolute utter devastation of our planet. So that within a mere 8 years, all of our vertebrates could be gone. And that does not bode well for us at all. And so the work that we do, in a sense, I think we're, if there are any sort of savior figures, in a sense, to help save the beautiful life here, it's really people who are going to the root of the problems and the dilemmas that we're causing, which means we're vegans, and we understand the reason why at a deep level. We understand our society. We understand the spiritual, psychological, anthropological, and historical dimensions of abusing animals and enslaving them routinely for food. And we understand what it does not only to them, but what it does to us, how it shuts down our natural feminine sensitivity and our natural capacities for tenderness and for intelligence. And creates really a desensitization in the children, that we are abusing our children terribly just by raising them, actually, in a herding culture like this, that, you know, there's fishing derbies and there's hot dog fish fries and, hot, you know, I mean, the whole thing is just all about harming, unfortunately, our children psychologically, socially, spiritually, and physically as well. So it's really time to understand that this obsolete way of living is just that. It's obsolete. And that we can, in a heroic, in a sense, heroic way, be people who are lighting our own candle as best we can to shine light in the darkness, and then do the best we can to let it be transmitted to others. It's really, I think, about this transmission idea. And I really love the idea of transmission. It's an old Buddhist teaching, the idea that when we awaken in some way, then it's not enough just to awaken, then we need to transmit. It's called transmitting the Dharma. Transmit the Dharma to people who are ready, and that we can cultivate our capacity to transmit the Dharma. So I think that's an important point, and really the more deeply we comprehend and live the Dharma, you know, the teachings, the understanding, the wisdom, then the more naturally we're transmitting it. in everything we say and do, and how we walk and how we talk and what we, you know, how we show up in the world, is a manifestation of our understanding that violence towards other living beings, for food or clothing or products or any other reason, is not only devastating to them but to ourselves, and we're abandoning that. So how does that actually look in our daily lives? There were a few questions that did come up during the month, probably more, but I can't remember all of them, but I remember a few that people specifically asked me about. And I think, you know, one of them has to do with being a World Peace Diet facilitator, and facilitating a group. Our friend Patricia Todd, who's had a group going on now for several years every week. And, her question, which I think is a question we all have from time to time, is when we're facilitating a group, to what degree do we just allow people to share whatever it is and be positive and affirmative and support them in what they're saying, and to what degree do we say, no, wait a minute, that is absolutely something that's not right. As a facilitator, we don't like to be sort of step out of the role of facilitator into the role of the authority. You know, this is how it is. And she was sharing, you know, and this happens, these kinds of things happen all the time. In her group, you know, people were talking about the transition to veganism, and the question came up about what do you do when, as a vegan, you're suddenly in a position where you're being offered non-vegan food, and it's hard to say no. You know, maybe you're invited to your somebody's house, and they offer you some cake with some egg in it. Do you say, oh, you know, sorry, I really appreciate it, but I'm vegan. I don't eat that, or however you want to do it. Or and of course it gets harder and harder if it's their mother's recipe or whatever, and they would really be hurt if you didn't take some, or all those kinds of things. So, and she was talking about how in the discussion that was going on, that most of the people were saying, in those situations, you should just put your veganism to the side and not hurt their feelings, and just eat a little bit. You know, eat a little bit of whatever it is, you know, a little roast beef or a little cake or whatever, because, you know, if you come across as being too picky, then it's actually worse for veganism. You know, veganism will grow faster if we now and then don't go along, you know, just don't go along with veganism and go along with what people would like us to do. And so she was kind of disturbed that these people were kind of all agreeing that this is wisdom, that we should eat a little dairy, eat a little bit of egg, eat a little bit of meat to keep the peace, because that's breaking, in a sense, our commitment to compassion for animals, you know, because we're actually showing an example of eating animals. But there's this other, there are quite a few people, even who are long-term vegans, who are advocating to be effective advocates. We shouldn't come across as being too righteous or too picky or too rigid and eat a little bit. You know, it's not a big deal. It's not about personal purity. Just eat a little bit. And so she was wondering how she could effectively steer the conversation away from that idea and say, wait a minute, but that's not the right thing to do. It's sort of take on the authority role and tell everybody that they were wrong in that approach. And what she should have done in that situation, she was asking what she should have done. And I think, you know, essentially, it is an important distinction when we're facilitating a group to try not to be too heavy-handed with being, you know, I'm the World Peace facilitator, so I'm right and you're wrong. You know, that idea, because that always, you know, the whole idea of vegans were right and the non-vegans are wrong, that's why there's people don't want to listen to us. You know, so my basic take on this, and some of you know what I'm probably going to say, is that instead of saying you shouldn't do that in that situation, you should stick with your guns, to just use I statements. It's always the safest thing. Just go back to I. Just say, it's really interesting, and I understand it's very tempting to just want to go along and eat what everybody's eating and not be the one that's different and so forth. However, I have found my own experience that in the big picture, if I'm able to stay true to my convictions, that it actually opens up more and more doorways. That people make an understanding, and I do it in a way that's respectful, that it's nothing to do with rejecting their food, but I just, the thing is, for me, it's not an option to eat animal-based foods, and I'm so glad I discovered that it's just not only not necessary, but not in anybody's best interest to do that, so I have other things that I eat, and I'd be happy to eat those things. And I think that's plant-based. Of course, the idea always is to try to head off these situations before they ever happen by making sure that before you're invited, people know that you're a vegan and you don't eat in anything else. I mean, usually people ask nowadays the things you don't eat or whatever. And offer to bring some food yourself if it looks like it's going to be a difficult burden for the person, and to try to do the best you can to keep harming. And that is important, to not give the impression that our life revolves only around being picky eaters, that we're concerned and care about our relationships with people and with animals, and so there's lots of foods we can eat. There's literally tens of thousands of foods and dishes and things. It's a huge variety, we just don't eat those foods that cause suffering. But the basic idea is to use I statements and to say, I discovered that this is great, and just try it out, because I think as we do that, what I've discovered is that Mel and I, as we've done that, we've just found that we're less and less are we ever in that situation. And what happens, I think, if we don't do that, then it's confusing for people when they say, but I thought you were vegan, but then you ate that, and where do you draw the line, and how do you decide, and so forth. So it's always, I think, in the big picture, it's always better to do the best we can to abide by our principles in these matters, and be an example for that for people, not in a superior way, but just in a loving, respectful way. And so that was something that I really wanted to talk a little bit about. And the other thing, there's a couple other notes I had here. Well, I do, actually, it's getting to the point where it's good to just go over. I want to go over the resources, just to mention a few things before we begin to move into the final stretch here. And again, if you have any comments, just feel free to press *6. I'll mention just when we look at the resources for the circle for this month, Madeline and I were on Lily Nation's World Peace Diet Sunday call. You can listen to a recording of that if you'd like. We really enjoyed that. Also, Madeline has three, not one, not two, but three new vegan intuitive cooking videos up on our YouTube channel. One for vegetarian pizza. I don't know if you're vegetarian. It should be vegetable pizza, Italian style, and making wild baking yeast and baking bread with the wild baking yeast that you make, which is really delicious. We've been eating a lot of Madeline's amazing bread lately that she makes with the wild yeast, and the yeast is just all around us and right in the air. So all you have to do is put some mix some water and flour together and leave the lid the jar off, and the yeast will come in, and you'll get your own yeast. And the bread rises beautifully. It's just delicious. So she teaches you how to do that in that video and then make the bread. And it's really like the kind of food we're like. It's like all organic, very simple, unprocessed, only one or two ingredients, and very healthy and And you get to cultivate a taste for it. It's great. You can use different grains. We use oats now. She's using a lot of oats as well as spelt and millet. Also, a few other things. Yeah, Susan, our good friend Susan Daftry, who's will be a facilitator on Long Island, is doing her study group, and you can look at, you know, her meetup announcements. There's so many people have done this, and I haven't you know, really kept track. But it's always nice to see what people do. And you can, you know, if you want to do a Ropi's diet reading group or study group in your area, you can kind of see how she did it and put the word out. You can do something similar, or you can do it differently. You know, it's really up to you as a facilitator, but it's a great way to just have people discuss, get together, maybe share food and discuss the ideas of the World Peace Diet once a week or once every couple of weeks, however you'd like to do it. And also our good friend Nancy Posnack in Washington, D.C., spoke recently at the Veggie Pride, and we have a video of that in New York City. And then the rest of it's just the usual, lots of news, just lots of news. And as always, there's both good news and sort of not so good news. And a nice article here about clean meat. Why, you know, the idea of clean meat is meat that is meat, it's actual animal flesh, but it's made from tissue cultures. So it's not really meat, and why, you know, some vegans say they would definitely eat it because it's going to save animals, and other vegans are saying, no, it's not a good idea. This is not addressing the underlying ethical dilemmas that we're engaged in. So interesting, a good article, good essay on that. And some articles on the health side also. And yeah, so quite a few. I'm just looking at all these. Yeah, this is a very positive, kind of positive article about China, how it's moving forward towards an ecological civilization. And, yeah, this is another interesting article about the amphibian apocalypse, which is part of what Salish was talking about. There's so many populations of animals are just collapsing all over the world for a variety of reasons. And so it's really important, I think, for us to understand these things. There's also a nice article here on the Lone Star Tick, which is heating up. It's a tick that bites people, and if the people eat meat, it makes them extremely sick. So it's kind of, again, maybe nature's way of getting people not to eat meat, perhaps. It's an interesting thing. But these ticks are spreading so fast all over the whole eastern United States, all the way up to Maine. And if you get bitten by this tick and then you eat meat, your body breaks out into hives, and it's extremely painful and serious. So quite a lot of news there. I noticed that we do have someone raise their hand. Let's see. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, Lily. Go ahead. Lily, you had your hand, I think, up, so I'm going to unmute you. Hello?
Oh, okay. Hello? Oh.
Lily, I'm sorry if you didn't want to be call, but I saw that you had raised your hand, and then I went into a little bit of a little talk there.
Yeah, I wish you had called me a little earlier. I got confused as to the time, and I didn't get on until a half hour ago, which I was just, you know, I'm devastated because I love these conference calls with you.
Right.
You know, my gorge rises pretty easily, so I decided to jump out of the queue. But I just want to say something that in going on 12 years of being a vegan because of the World Peace Diet, I've never experienced anyone trying to get me to eat non-vegan food.
Okay.
And that's because I've taken a full stand, and it's not
right.
A stand about you're wrong and I'm right.
Right.
It's a stand that I said something's changed in my whole chemistry and my whole outlook
right.
on life that I could not eat anything like that, even if you know, you were pointing a gun at my head and saying, eat this or I kill you, I couldn't do it. And as far as meat that's been processed, I feel the same way. I mean, even though it's just, you know, even though it's not supposedly a real animal that was killed,
right,
just the thought of eating it so sickens me that I feel, you know, it's kind of a metaphysical thing. Once you're a vegan, this is for me, okay, now that I became a vegan through and through, and it happened very quickly within the first three chapters of the World Peace Diet, once I became a vegan through and through, there was a metaphysical thing that occurred through the book and then to me that actually you were talking about transmitting the Dharma. I'm able to transmit
mm-hmm.
the World Peace Diet. Well, of course, the fact that I've read it eight times helps that. But still, I transmit the message of the World Peace Diet, and it creates a kind of a little kind of a parameter around my body, of a kind
yep.
of a light around
right.
my body that mm-hmm. actually transmits to anyone. I mean, my mom was still alive when I became a vegan. She never tried to and she was the kind that always wanted to give me something that she, you know, homemade that she baked. And she never tried to do that after I became
yeah.
a vegan, because there was a,
right.
there was this mantle around me, this protective
right.
mantle. And I really believe that those people who say, have a bite here and have a bite there, and show them that you're not a, you know, fanatic, are missing the whole idea of being an example to humanity.
Right.
And that's what we are. We're not our own people anymore. I'm not set apart. I mean, I went to a barbecue a few weeks ago.
Oh, right,
right before
right.
I did World Peace Diet Sunday. It was very hard for me to look at it because it looked like I was walking through a slaughterhouse. I mean, the carnage
right.
was unbelievable. And yet, I loved the people there, and they knew
yeah.
that I did. My heart
yeah.
was not cold, and I didn't go around thinking, I hate you people. Look what you're doing.
Yeah.
There was
right.
never any of that. There was just that when I was offered something, I said, well, you know, I'm vegan, but look what I get to eat. And there were some wonderful homemade baked beans, and there was a beautiful
yeah.
salad. And I said, this is the way I eat. And so I'm transmitting the message of
yes.
the World Peace Diet through my being. And
yeah.
I already missed the group. This is the first Sunday that I haven't done it
oh.
you know, in years. So I miss it. I am already feeling my addiction to my group.
Is it Sunday? I mean, is it this coming Sunday, or was it last Sunday?
Last Sunday was my last
yeah.
Sunday.
Yeah, so it actually hasn't come yet, but you're not preparing for it. I know what you mean.
No,
yeah, yeah.
I always prepare.
Right.
I always prepare,
right, right.
and I write my missive. And in a way,
yeah.
it's a good time for a break, because Sharon's going through her own personal tragedy
yeah.
with
yeah.
her mother dying. So it's very, I mean,
yeah.
it's kind of good, because she writes, takes the dictation for my missive.
Right.
So anyway, it's okay, but it's like, oh, but I keep spreading the message at wherever
yes.
I go. And
yeah.
that's all I had to say. I'm
well, thanks.
I
thanks
so
much,
long,
Lily.
But when I heard that,
yeah.
it just got the juices flowing. And
right.
I just feel that if you read the World Peace Diet enough, there will never be an issue ever again.
Right.
You will not feel you have to people please anyone.
Right,
you'll just
right, right.
be setting in, you don't have to people please anyone. You're pleasing the planet and the animals on
right.
it. And that's enough. And the people, the
yeah.
ones who are offended by that, you don't have to do this in an offensive way. I don't think I've offended
right.
anyone ever being
yeah.
a vegan, and I don't think Will Tuttle has either, or Madeline. I don't think you've offended
right.
people being a vegan.
Right.
You don't have to.
Thank
you.
That's very, yeah, very well articulated. Thanks so much, Lily. Appreciate
Thank
it. It's great
and
to hear
I'll let
voice.
You know when I get World Peace Diet Sunday started up again.
It'll Absolutely.
Be, it'll
we
be
want to
sooner
know.
Rather than later. Thanks. Thanks.
Great. Okay.
Lovely
great
to care. Be
Thank
here.
You.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. So, okay. So, yeah, that's an important point. This is something actually when we hear this kind of feedback from people that they're, gosh, it's hard being a vegan when they travel, and people really can't find vegan food, and it's difficult when they go to other cultures, or if they go back to the family and so forth. And I can see that, you know, from that there's, it certainly is difficult. I'm sure not, I don't think that it's not difficult, but one of the things that I've noticed, and Madeline and I say this sometimes, is that things are difficult when we are 99% committed to something. You know, if we're 99% committed, there's always these little temptations that arise and so forth. And it's like this saying you've maybe heard, when we become 100% committed to something, then it's like the universe just opens doorways, or it's the basic energy of our mind and body and affairs shifts somehow. And we just don't, typically, very often, we just suddenly find that these situations don't manifest anymore, where suddenly we're facing difficult decisions about whether we should say yes or no to this person offering us a little piece of cake with a little bit of egg or whatever. It just doesn't happen, you know. It's something that we're in a sense beyond that anymore happening. So, but in the meantime, it's always good to, I think, remember that, like Lily said, we're ambassadors for a beautiful cause that, in many ways, does transcend our own individuals' likes and dislikes, and to do the best we can at every moment to embody what veganism is, which is love and respect for others, understanding that no one's deliberately getting up in the morning thinking they want to harm cows and pigs and chickens. We're basically just programmed by our society, and if we're eating animal foods, it's because of that programming. I've mentioned before, and I'll mention it again, the little elevator speech that I think is very helpful, just to remember these four main points, I guess it is, that I'm so grateful that I discovered that the only reason I was eating animal foods all those years was because I was just following orders. Now I realize it wasn't in my best interest. I'm not doing it anymore, and it's fantastic. And those basic points that the only reason I was eating animal foods is because I was following orders, that's point number one. We're all in the same boat. No one eats animal foods because of a choice. It's a programmed act behavior. And then number two, we can discover that it's not necessary. And this is liberation. There's a reason for this, and we can see that it's not necessary, and that it's not in our best interest to do so. And then we've made the change. We're not doing it anymore, and it's wonderful. It's just kind of like the awakening that is available to us as human beings in our society. We've been forced sort of away from that awakening by being forced to participate in these mealtime rituals of violence from the time of little tiny infants at the hands of people we trust completely, our own parents and teachers and doctors and so forth. So it's understandably very difficult for us to change, because we're not rational beings. We are not rational beings. We're basically tribal beings. You know, we're part of a tribe and want to be part of the tribe. If we were all rational, we would all go vegan. It'd be easy, but we know rationality goes out of the window when it comes to being accepted and loved and fulfilling our habits and how we look in the eyes of others and so forth. So, and our self-image. So that's where the tribalism comes in. And fear, I think, really the two biggest problems in our world in many ways are these, are fear and tribalism. You know, the tribalism that kind of keeps us close down to anything else outside of our tribal way of looking at the world. And then the fear, of course, that keeps us ingrained modes of behavior. So the more I think that our love, our caring, our adventuresome spirit can triumph over these tendencies, and we can begin to manifest more and more in our lives a joyful and liberating way of being, that's not only making our own lives happy and the lives of those around us and our friends and family, but really I think the entire planet is blessed by that. So I want to thank all of you. I think we're really at the absolute final end limit of our time. It's now been an hour and a half, so we really have to stop here. So I'm sorry that Anna didn't make it on the call, but I'm glad that I was able to convey the whole story, and hopefully we'll hear from her perhaps next time. So the next third Thursday call will be in June. It'll be June 21st. Wow, that's exciting. That's solstice. We'll have our next meeting will be on the solstice, June 21st. And for the next month, I just wish all of you a fantastic time. If you have any questions in the meantime, feel free to let me know. Send me an email or something. And we do our best to try to respond to these things as best we can. We do have quite a few events coming up in the next month. Speaking engagements, like I mentioned, will be at the Animal Liberation Conference in Berkeley. We'll be speaking in San Francisco, actually, day after tomorrow on Saturday. It is a showing of the new film, Eating You Alive. And then the Animal Liberation Conference, and then the What the Health Conference in San Francisco on the 2nd and 3rd, and then in Las Vegas on the 9th and 10th at the Health, Harmony, and Healing Conference. And, yeah, so those are the main things, I think, between now and then. We've got some online events coming up also. And so much love to you all, and we wish you all the best. It's really an honor to be able to share these ideas together. And until the next time we see you, may compassion continue to encircle your life for the benefit of all your thoughts, feelings, actions, and endeavors to be a blessing to all living beings. And together we are transforming our world. And Madeline sends a big hug also. And we'll close with a short piece. This is the turkey song, and we like to see the wild turkeys we have around here and remember that in the end, it's freedom that will win always. This is the turkey song. Enjoy.